Would like to have Mr. Harris introduce item 13.
Item 13 is total maximum daily load for nitrogen compounds and organophosphates in streams of the Pajaro River Basin. For item 13, staff will recommend that the Central Coast Water Board approve a resolution that establishes total maximum daily loads for nitrogen compounds and orthophosphate for streams within the Pajaro River Basin. Approval of this agenda item will result in amending the basin plan to incorporate these TMDLs and associated water quality improvement strategy to rectify nutrient pollution of streams in the river basin. Peter Osmolowski will provide a brief presentation to support the recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Peter Osmolowski, I'm TMDL program staff. Good afternoon, Chair Wolf and board members. And this is the presentation for the total maximum daily loads for nutrients in streams of the Pajaro River Basin. This presentation is going to support our recommendation. First, I thought it'd be a good idea to just geographically orient the board to the Pajaro River Basin. It is one of the largest river basins in our Central Coast region. And I think it's worth pointing out just how large and how diverse it is. It's 1,300 square miles. There's a number of agricultural valleys and agricultural coastal plains in the watershed, specifically the Pajaro Valley, the South Santa Clara Valley, the San Juan Valley. And these are dissected by northwest trending mountain ranges, the Santa Cruz Mountains, the East Bay Hills, the Gabalon Range, and the Diablo Range. It's a very diverse watershed, both climatologically, land use-wise, ecologically, and topographically and geologically. So I always think it's worth to keep that in mind, just the diversity and scale of this river basin. Now, the bottom line is that we are recommending adoption of the resolution for this item. By adopting this resolution, in practical terms, it means you would be voting to amend the Central Coast Basin Plan to incorporate total maximum daily loads for nutrients and an associated implementation strategy to address nutrient pollution in streams of the river basin. So that's the bottom line. Just a little bit of highlights on this TMDL before we dive into it a little further. Just for your reference and recall that TMDLs are plans, they're informational tools or plans to improve water quality, and they're required by the Federal Clean Water Act. TMDLs are not regulatory tools in and of themselves, like a permit, an order, a prohibition. But they do use or identify existing, planned, or new regulatory measures to implement the TMDL water quality goals. For this TMDL, we are proposing to leverage existing permits and orders and prohibitions that are already in this river basin. We're not recommending any new types of regulatory measures or permits. It is important to note that the applicable water quality objectives that we identify are going to take a long time to achieve. This will be a challenging TMDL to achieve, especially the nutrient water quality goals, especially in an agricultural watershed. It will be challenging to achieve, and it could take several decades to achieve the ultimate water quality goals for nutrient pollution. So that is important to acknowledge. US EPA has provisionally reviewed this TMDL, and they recommend that our board adopt it. This is a photograph of an algal bloom in the lower Pajaro River, just an illustration of biostimulation, algae problems, nutrient pollution problems. In terms of nutrient pollution, nutrients are basically plant food, as most of us know. And they can uh, they can uh, they can incur plant growth, algae growth, excessive algae growth in rivers. But nutrients act in combination with many other environmental and physical factors to induce plant growth or algae growth. So it's a complex, complex problem. There are many confounding factors to nutrient pollution. It's not simply just how high the concentrations of nutrients are. There are many other factors that contribute to algae growth. The problem with algae growth, we probably all remember photosynthesis from high school science, that plants like algae have this dissolved oxygen cycle. So the problem when you have too much algae in a stream, a river, a lake, is that it can disrupt the natural dissolved oxygen balance in the water body. It can result over time in decreased biological diversity. It can be a public nuisance. If there are cyanotoxins or microcystins, it could be a public health risk. And it can result in hypoxia, lethal levels of low dissolved oxygen that can disrupt the aquatic food web and result in fish kills. So that's sort of the cascade of water quality problems that can result from excessive nutrient loading to streams. This is the only data slide I'm going to show. It's a slide that shows some stream water quality data overlain on a land use map of the northern Paro River Basin. It's a bubble map. A bubble map shows a geographical or statistical distribution of water quality data. The large red bubbles are stream monitoring sites where, on average, the nutrient concentrations are quite high. And in contrast, the small blue bubbles or dots are where, on average, the nutrient water quality, the nutrient concentrations are generally pretty low. And the takeaway message from this is that visually we can see where the main water quality problems are. In these valley areas, these where the agriculture and the urbanized areas are, in the uplands and the mountain areas, the nutrient water quality is actually quite good. So that's just just an illustration of where the water quality is kind of bad and where it's kind of good. The TMDL report attachment to the staff report has a lot of information on sources of nutrients in the river basin, both natural sources and nutrient sources from human activities. But the bottom line is the major controllable sources that we need to worry about are, and this shouldn't surprise anyone, is agricultural fertilizer. Also, municipal runoff and shallow groundwater are major sources. Shallow groundwater is only controllable in the sense that if you can control leaching to the shallow groundwater over time, it could help with achieving our TMDL goals. This slide kind of is going to illustrate the meat and potatoes of the TMDL. In a TMDL, one thing we do is identify our desired conditions. This is what we want the water quality to look like if we achieve the TMDL. So in this case, our desired conditions, or our end point, if you will, are acceptable dissolved oxygen levels, acceptable levels of algae and algal toxins, acceptable ammonia levels, ammonia being a nitrogen compound, and acceptable levels of nitrate to support drinking water sources. So that's a narrative description of our desired goals, our desired condition. The green circles represent the constituents we're going to measure and the numeric thresholds or water quality goals that we want to strive towards and ultimately achieve in order to reach those desired conditions in the blue center bubble. So the chlorophyll, we want to get chlorophyll down to acceptable levels, hopefully below 15 micrograms per liter. The nutrients, we have some numeric targets that we developed for the nutrients, microcystins, and levels of dissolved oxygen that will support beneficial uses in the river basin. So that's just an illustration of where we want to get to and the types of constituents we're going to measure and the numeric thresholds we're going to strive towards achieving. The primary focus in this TMDL is nitrogen, but we are identifying phosphorus water quality goals as well. US EPA recommends dual nitrient criteria. That means water quality goals for both nitrogen and phosphorus as a way to provide additional assurance against the risk of biostimulation. At this time in the Central Coast region, the research that has been done seems to suggest that in streams and rivers, nitrogen is the primary nutrient that is contributing to biostimulation to algae growth. But we do identify dual nutrient criteria for both nitrogen and phosphorus. The high priority areas that we think need some implementation to achieve this TMDL are the lower Pajaro and Watsonville Slough subwatersheds, upper Pajaro and lower Yagas Creek subwatersheds, San Juan Valley subwatershed, and in a second I'll show you a map that'll show those priority areas. And we have some estimates of load reductions that we need to achieve the TMDL in various stream reaches of the river basin. In general, we need bigger reductions in the dry season compared to the wet season. And some streams are doing fine, and some streams are going to need a lot of nutrient loading reduction. So on to the map of the high priority areas. That map shows the high priority subwatersheds that we think will require quite a bit of effort to achieve the TMDL. We've also worked with the stakeholders who wanted to some flexibility in terms of we don't want to just look at nitrogen concentrations, phosphorus water column concentrations. We want to have other metrics we can look at to see how we're making progress and if we're achieving the TMDL. So we're obviously, I showed that one slide that shows nutrient pollution is this complex problem with a lot of different environmental responses. So we've identified dissolved oxygen targets, chlorophyll targets. We're also going to use nutrient loading, mass loading, as a measure. So these were all discussed with the stakeholders in terms of adding some more flexibility. Ms. Hunter.
I just have a quick question. And the second or third carrot down, below at 20 assessed streams in the river basin. So I get the load reduction numbers there for wet and dry. What is the second item there, range of end load reductions needed, 0% to 91%? What's that referring to?
So the total load reduction in some streams is 0% because they're doing fine. They're not polluted, so it's 0%. Some streams, the nitrate or the nutrient levels are so high that they're probably going to need up to a 90% reduction to achieve our water quality standards. Does that make sense? Recall from one of my beginning slides that I mentioned that TMDLs are plans, they're informational tools, they're not self-implementing as a permit or a prohibition would be. So we've identified the permits, orders, and prohibitions that already are in this river basin that we can leverage to implement the TMDL. And of course, our agricultural order, those bullets are sort of some of the requirements of the agricultural order that will implement this nutrient TMDL. So the agricultural order does have a lot of monitoring requirements, which is very useful for us in terms of TMDL monitoring and achievement, farm water quality plans, reporting nitrogen applied, and irrigation and nutrient management plans. So we're going to leverage the agricultural order to implement this TMDL. There's also a lot of information in the TMDL report attachment 2 to the staff report that talks about how we're going to leverage NPDES stormwater permits, NPS wastewater permits, and the current existing animal waste discharge prohibition. So that's just a laundry list of the existing regulatory tools that we will leverage to implement this TMDL. I've been at some meetings where I've heard growers say some growers have a perception that they don't ever get any credit. And I've taken that comment to heart, and this slide is just going to be an acknowledgement of the many innovative growers and resource professionals in the Pajaro River Basin. That's a photo of an irrigation nutrient management plan workshop that was held in the Pajaro River Basin. There was a Prop 50 irrigation and nutrient management grant program that was approved a few years ago in the River Basin, and they did report their results. They achieved substantial nitrogen loading reduction through irrigation efficiency. In the Watsonville Slough system, there have been substantial environmental and water quality improvements based on land conservation practices. Some of the nurseries around Watsonville have figured out how to reuse the nursery water through tailwater recovery systems, thereby reducing water use and nutrient runoff. And around Gilroy, there's agricultural entities that are employing low sprinklers and soil moisture monitoring, which are reducing runoff. So that's just an acknowledgement to some of the very many innovative growers we have in our region. I mentioned early on that this TMDL is going to be challenging to achieve. It could take many years, perhaps decades. So we did identify a few interim water quality goals that we want to aim for on our way to achieving our ultimate water quality goals. Within 10 years, we hope to be able to see the nitrate drinking water standard achieved in this watershed, as well as we hope to see any remaining ammonia toxicity eliminated in the streams of this watershed. In 15 years, we hope that the less stringent wet season biostimulatory nutrient targets will be achieved. And then our final goal, 25 years, we hope to see the attainment of our more stringent dry season biostimulatory targets in streams of this watershed. So that's our plan in terms of interim goals. We've also stated in the TMDL documentation that biostimulation algae eutrophication is an ongoing area of current scientific research. So we don't want to assume that the numeric targets we developed today are going to be applicable in 15 or 25 years. So if there is new science, new research, new data that would suggest that the board may need to reconsider this TMDL, reconsider the implementation plan, reconsider the numeric targets, then we will reopen this TMDL for the board's consideration based on that.
Pete, a question for you. What is the biostimulatory target?
Okay, those are biostimulatory targets refers to the nutrient water quality targets
that you put up there early on.
I could back up and show you. So it basically refers to the nutrient targets, that top green circle.
Okay.
And the I've never really liked that word biostimulation, but it is a word in our basin plan. So we link the nutrient pollution to our water quality standard for biostimulation.
So if I could point out a couple things I think that are interesting is nitrate, for example. The Division of Drinking Water recently changed the MCL to, it used to be 45 milligrams of nitrate as what, nitrogen and ammonia, whatever. Anyway, to standardize with the national manner in which we report, it's now 10 milligrams per liter. So that as nitrate. So that's as nitrogen. And so that now is, the 10 is now, it didn't change, it's just now reported. That is our MCL for drinking water. Two is where you're getting into an area where you don't have a lot of man-made influence, 1-2 milligrams per liter in a native watershed. And for a wastewater treatment plant that does nitrification, denitrification, maybe 6 is the number they might be able to achieve. So it kind of gives you an idea just to a reference point for that number. And it is very site specific and depends on a lot of things, shade, temperature, flow, a lot of factors.
In terms of public comments, we received 2 written comment letters, one from the South County Regional Wastewater Authority, Mr. Vaziri. They requested a more generalized management-oriented approach to implementing their orthophosphate loading reductions, and we conferred with our NPDES staff, and we looked at legal guidance, and we were able to accommodate their request for a more generalized management approach. And we received a written comment letter from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and they did state that they supported the TMDL and recommended that our board adopt this TMDL. So starting to wrap up here, TMDLs, I've always found, they have a lot of jargon. There's a lot of focus on the administrative process, but I always try to keep a mental picture of where are we trying to go with this TMDL? What are our goals? So these are just some visual illustrations of the TMDL goals. Viable freshwater habitat for fish, wildlife, and invertebrates, and we can get there by reducing nutrient pollution. That's a photo of Struve Slough in the Pajaro River Basin. We want to support the drinking water beneficial use of our streams, the MUN beneficial use of our streams. We also want to protect aquifer water quality, and we do that by implementing our groundwater recharge beneficial use for streams. And we don't want to forget that we do have some existing high-quality waters in this river basin, and we want to protect those. We want to prevent any further degradation of our remaining high-quality waters and our waters that are currently meeting the water quality standards for nutrients. So the bottom line, again, is we are recommending that you adopt this resolution. And again, by voting to adopt the resolution, you would be voting to amend the basin plan to incorporate these TMDLs and an implementation strategy to address nutrient pollution in streams of this river basin. And that is the last slide, and we'll be happy to entertain questions, comments.
When was that slide taken?
That slide is taken by a gentleman, Mr. Ron Horry, who I've corresponded with, and he takes really nice photos. And this one is from the upper Uvas Creek. It's in Uvas Canyon, which is in the Santa Cruz Mountains part of the Pajaro River Basin.
Wonderful county park up there.
Yeah,
yes.
Boy, if I was a fish, I'd be pretty happy there.
Yes. We do have some very high quality streams in parts of this river basin.
Yeah. Thank you. So, questions? Mayor Delgado?
All right, thank you. Can you go back a few slides when you had the 10-25 long-term goals? So there's interim goals for nitrate standards, but not for phosphorus or organophosphate. Why is that?
Well, the reason I used the biostimulatory targets was it was a shorthand way for me to say this is our nitrogen orthophosphate target. So when I say biostimulatory targets, that's shorthand for both nitrogen and phosphorus.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. No questions.
Earlier, when you were talking about some of the impairments to, you know, TMDLs, you were referring to shallow aquifer, and then you clarified it a little bit, but I still need a little more clarification.
So was it when I was talking about shallow groundwater as a source?
Yes.
Okay. So shallow groundwater, that is groundwater that's generally less than 15 meters below ground surface, that can interact with streams, with lakes, with sloughs, with estuaries, and it can provide inputs of nutrients and salts to those surface water bodies. So that what I was trying to say was the nitrate or the nutrients that are in the groundwater now are not really controllable, because that slide was talking about controllable sources. So they're not directly controllable, but they're controllable in the sense that if we reduce nitrogen leaching, over time we'll improve that groundwater, therefore we'll reduce the groundwater load to the streams, lakes, and sloughs.
Yeah, because quite often when you're, you know, when you're looking at those shallow water, it's referred to as riparian aquifer, which is influenced from, you know, the surface percolation from stream flow, and it's pretty much the same water in a sense, because when you're talking about 15 feet, I mean, the interaction, you know, is so close. So I
remember that groundwater, streams and groundwater, of course, are connected.
Yeah.
And it flows from groundwater to the streams and vice versa. And there are many watersheds where the only reason the streams flow during the dry months is because of base flow, the flow that groundwater is contributing. So if you have land uses that are impacting the groundwater and the groundwater is serving as base flow into the stream, then you would have the issue with nutrients. And if you've already impacted that, it's already in the soil profile, you can't control it at that point. I think that's what.
So more or less it's like an artesian effect that you're referring to, where you would have groundwater coming to the surface?
And no, it's just the geology underneath, the structure that the interconnection, the layers of soil and rock that allow the shallow groundwater to flow into and feed the stream.
Okay, got it, thank you. No question on my right? All right, thank you.
I should say that there's one, I should have mentioned there's one typo in the resolution that if you vote to approve, we'll have to change. On the signature page of the resolution where Ken, Mr. Harris signs, we originally wrote, drafted this resolution for the May board meeting, so it says May 28th. But if it's approved, we need to change that date to July 30th.
Okay, so we have these interim goals, final goal, and how realistic are these goals? What kind of changes will they require in the orders that we have out there to attain? Do we have any sense of that?
It's an educated guess. There's no, to my knowledge, that even, you know, research scientists are hard-pressed to have really quantifiable, you know, timelines for improving some of this nutrient pollution. I've certainly read a lot of U.S. Geological Survey publications, and, you know, a lot of it is an educated guess in terms of, you know, they're talking about decades it'll take. They don't really have it quantified to, well, it'll be 8 years, you know. But we think at this time the requirements that are in the current ag order, which include the irrigation and nutrient management plans, the farm water quality management plans, the fact that some of our grant programs that we funded have shown to be capable of implementing practices that do result in substantial nutrient pollution reductions, we think those requirements are sufficient at this time to achieve some of these interim goals. But frankly, I can't guarantee that. I can't say for sure that you will be able to achieve these 10 and 15-year interim goals. But you know, that's our educated guess right now.
So if I have it clearly then, because as one of the slides state, TMDLs don't implement themselves. You know, the educated guess is that we're on some sort of track, given the regulatory measures that we're taking, to reach at least the interim goals. And obviously, if we set a TMDL, we're setting a target that we expect any future regulatory actions that we take to contribute to hitting. So your sense is the educated guess that we're relatively on track to hit the interim goals, that we may have to do more to hit the ultimate goal.
That's possible. Most of our regulatory tools in this river basin that we're relying on, the ag order, the phase two general stormwater permits, they're relatively newish. They haven't been in place for long periods of time. So we think the requirements that are in there are sufficient at this time. We'd like to give them a chance to work. But in terms of the 25-year goal, it's, you know, you're getting into, you know, a little bit of just educated guess, speculation, but yes, it's possible that other regulatory measures would be needed, you know, 15 years from now, perhaps.
So it's what we're doing by passing a TMDL here then is we're setting a standard and a set of goals, and then as we go down the road, we'll use those goals to judge the adequacy of the regulatory measures like the ag order and like the stormwater orders because those essentially need to move us in the direction of attaining the TMDL.
I think that's a fair characterization. I would add one caveat to it, which is these are the goals based on current knowledge and science that we think we need to achieve with our regulatory tools. This is an area of ongoing research. Maybe in 10 years, we'll need to change these numeric thresholds, these goals. But based on our current knowledge, this is where we think we need to get to with our current and or future regulatory tools.
And remember, TMDLs rely on an iterative approach in that you establish goals, you take action, you monitor, you go back, you readjust, and you continue the process.
Mr. Young?
So how old is our oldest nutrient TMDL?
I believe our oldest nutrient TMDL is the 2005 Pajaro nitrate TMDL. This river basin actually had a nitrate TMDL, which this TMDL is going to supersede and replace. The 2005 nitrate TMDL only addressed the Pajaro River and Yagas Creek, and it only addressed the drinking water beneficial use water quality standard. Mm. It did not address degradation of aquatic habitat. So I believe 2005, that's 10 years. I believe that's our oldest.
Okay. And then how many that are just, I mean, what would come next chronologically? And where I'm going with this is, do we have any that are 7, 8, 9 years old where we have a 10-year target? And I'm just kind of curious, how are we doing?
I believe Mr. Schmidt is going to have some information on water quality improvements. What I can tell you from what I've seen in the data is we are seeing in the Watsonville slough system, for example, we're seeing substantial improvements in nutrient water quality. There are some areas, reaches, I believe, in the Pajaro River that we're seeing some reductions. So it's a mixed bag is a short story. Some areas, it seems like we're seeing some improvement in nutrient water quality, and in some areas we're not. The other thing to keep in mind is there is a lot of information that suggests that concentrations are not the only way to measure progress. And so we also, in this TMDL, are saying, look, we can't just look at, take a grab sample out of the river, measure the concentration, and say, well, that's how we're going to measure progress. So we're going to be looking at loading reductions and various other metrics to measure progress. But the short answer is it's a mixed bag right now. There's some areas that seem like they're improving and other areas not. In terms of nutrient pollution TMDLs or TMDLs that specifically address biostimulation and aquatic habitat degradation, our newest TMDL is 2013. Our board adopted in 2013 the Salinas nutrient TMDL and the San Maria nutrient TMDL, and this approach is almost identical to those two TMDLs. So it's something the board has seen before. It's not unprecedented, but those are our most recent biostimulation TMDLs.
And how does staff work this out? You've got a team that is, you know, designing, drafting, issuing TMDLs. And then you have other staff that are essentially looking at the regulatory tools, like the irrigated lands order and other permits, which
they're all talking to each other. Pete and the other staff who developed this are talking to the regulatory programs as they're developing it. The monitoring staff have established monitoring protocols and locations where they monitor. You're going to hear from Kurt about the coalition, the Surface Water Monitoring Coalition, about what they've been doing. So there's lots of moving parts, and they're all kind of talking to each other. So I think we know at any one point who's doing what and
what's working and maybe what isn't working.
Yeah, but remember, this is not instantaneous. As he said, this is not instantaneous. It takes years to collect the data to see, you know, because 1 year maybe. So for example, I don't want to give away the next presentation, but you're going to see the impacts that the drought has had. You know, if there's no water in this stream, you can't take a measurement. So I mean, that's just one factor that has to be considered in trying to evaluate or generate trends over the long term. So this is a long-term effort, nothing short-term about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the TMDL itself took how many years to develop?
We've been developing this TMDL since 2012, about 3 years.
Yeah, I remember there's a whole arm's length list of TMDLs for the whole Central Coast region.
Yep.
You know,
there's thousands of water body listings, right. And every year we add to that set.
What percent are we through the list? Any idea? Just a rough guess. Are we like halfway there?
That's a good question. My guess is it's not halfway.
Okay. I would say less than halfway.
We don't want to depress staff.
Yeah.
And we the first years of the TMDL program, a lot of time was spent on pathogen and bacteria TMDLs, and also perhaps some metals, mercury. So the nutrient TMDLs, especially the ones addressing aquatic habitat, are pretty new for our TMDL program.
I should say that, you know, nutrients is a very controversial issue. Lots of people, a lot of different ideas. There's a tool called the Nutrient Numeric Endpoint Model that has been used and is still being refined and actually was supposed to be adopted by the state board. And that it has not happened. It actually has been postponed due to higher priority work. It was used in a couple of instances. It actually originated to deal with the Klamath River nutrient TMDLs, you know, with the severe algae blooms that they had up on the Klamath and the lakes that are created by the dams up there. It also was used, the most recent use was in the revised MPDS permit for the Sacramento River wastewater treatment plant. I think it was used there, wasn't it? I think so. And so it's only been used a couple of times, and it's very site-specific, and you have to put in very site-specific parameters. And so it is an area of ongoing, as Pete said, an area of ongoing work. And so I think the still to be seen exactly where the science mm-hmm. ultimately takes us.
You know, Ken, just jumping ahead to tomorrow's discussion about strategic planning, and I was struggling before with trying to figure out how do we look at prioritization? And it occurred to me, if we looked at what the TMDL group does, I would ask the question, if we still take the five bullet point categories, you know, human health being number one, are we going after those TMDLs that address human health issues first?
And you're stealing my thunder for tomorrow.
Yeah, I was going to say
so,
that.
So the answer is yes, because I'm working on when we prioritize and look at what TMDLs we're going to work on in our work plan in the TMDL group, we look exactly at all of those things that you just talked about. We look at what has the board established as their priority, how do things align with our vision, and that's exactly what we look at.
Well,
so now that she's giving you the answer, you still have to show up.
Yeah.
Well, Jennifer, they say great minds think alike.
And to your point of what percentage of the items on the 3 to 3D list have we addressed by TMDLs, that's a moving target as well. I mean,
right.
We're currently updating, you know, we have wonderful water quality monitoring data that we collect, and we're continually updating that list, and we're going through that process right now.
Good.
Okay. So great minds think alike, Mr. Harris, and yours truly, because when you were talking about the impact of drought. I mean, when we looking at the picture, you had the wet season and dry season, we could almost say dry years or dry long cycles and wet long cycles. And when you're looking at, for example, the 8-year period, and you get a 4-year historical drought, you know, I would think that has a tremendous effect. Because when you talk about biostimulation, you know, one of them is, of course, the effect of temperature. But, and that can have a significant impact when we're looking at, hey, this is a record year. You know, we averaged 2 degrees C above average over the past 50 years. That's very significant impact on water temperature. And then likewise, when we look at precipitation. So trying to get your hands around this, you know, you talk about developing science. It almost seems that another matrix that should be layered is to look at the impact of temperature, because we cannot then say in an objective way, you know, that we're failing on our TMDL targets if actually we have an external cause of temperature increase due to climate change. That's not fair. So that would be one example. And then the other one, if we take the amount of precipitations, and we certainly have data about, you know, 50-year averages, et cetera. And so I would think that having that other layer of information would help provide, you know, an objective analysis due to the less controllable factors, because, you know, we talked about nitrates, phosphates, et cetera. Some of these, you know, are a little bit controllable. You mentioned the ag order and what is being done, but I'm not sure if this is a model that is being currently contemplated.
What I can tell you is, you are correct, and we are cognizant, I am cognizant of the fact that nutrient pollution in a Mediterranean type climate environment has a lot more complexities that you might not see out on the Atlantic seaboard, where climatologically it's not as flashy as our Mediterranean climate. So I've always advocated that we can't just look one year to the next and compare. You know, there's long-term trends in terms of precipitation. Our Mediterranean climate is obviously very flashy, the stream flows as well as precipitation, temperature, and there has not been a lot of nutrient studies done in Mediterranean climates. I've looked through the literature. It's not the same as the eastern seaboard or over in Europe, so there's not a ton of literature yet on it. So I agree with you absolutely, and I think we need to be cognizant moving forward that we have to not just look at the water quality information, but the climatological and how it all wraps in together.
All right, thank you. I have three speaker cards for this particular item, and I would like to start with Kay Mercer.
Hello, I'm Kay Mercer, and I'm with KMI. And I actually am not working on the Pajaro Valley. I don't have any clients in that area and generally don't work in that area. But I did want to comment on the nutrient issues and talk about some work that I'm doing at the state level. The State Water Board actually has a technical advisory panel that is providing, working on this issue for a statewide nutrient policy, and also developing the nutrient numeric endpoints that Peter just talked about. And so I'm participating in that. In early May, Abby and I hosted the science committee that is working on the nutrient numeric endpoints to visit farms on the Central Coast. And so we definitely, the next step is for the State Water Board nutrient policy process to start working on stakeholder committees to bring in stakeholder input on these nutrient numeric endpoints and statewide nutrient, development of statewide nutrient policy. So when it comes to the nutrient numeric endpoints and the types of biostimulatory numeric standards that are in this TMDL, I would say that the state probably will have a different approach. And it will not be to just look at a single numeric standard within a biostimulatory context, but will be to look at, to create a model that looks at multiple constituents at once. So you don't just say, oh, you are exceeding a nitrate numeric standard, therefore you're out of compliance. It would look at the nitrate, phosphorus, shade, temperature, oxygen, and pH all together to determine compliance. As Peter said, it's very complex. There's a lot of different things to look at, but they're actually trying to develop a model that will do that so that it's not just, doesn't just leave it up to the regional boards or to some environmental activists to say, oh, we're out of compliance. So anyway, I kind of wanted to report on that. You had a lot of discussion about where this is going in the future and wanted to let you know that the state is actually working on this, and it is sliding, largely because it's such a complex issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Kay. How often the group meets?
That that's kind of been a bone of contention from a process point of view. It's just that it's been sort of like the Army, hurry up and wait. And so we're asking for more routine meetings, you know, at least quarterly, and where we can everybody can get it on their schedules. And so that I've been very encouraged about the meetings that I've attended and the type of interaction there is. The State Water Board, I'm working with Zane Polson, and I mean, they're looking for any kind of input. I need to sit down with Abby, and we need to put together some input from the Central Coast. Central Coast gets lost in the shuffle. We have 4,000 acres versus the millions of acres. We have 4,000, 1,500 growers versus the 80,000 over in the San Joaquin Valley. So we have to be very proactive to provide the state with the kind of, to get the kind of input we need, or they need, from the Central Coast, so they don't make some decisions that just don't fit over here, because we have just such different farming systems and different, basically different environments.
But then having the representation of yourself and Abby, it's not quantity, but quality that counts.
Oh, thank you, Jean-Pierre. Thank you very much.
So speaking of Abby, you're next.
Good afternoon. Once again, Abby Taylor Silva with the Grower Shipper Association in Salinas. So we do have some concerns that the regional board is considering setting a standard and a set of goals that could be unattainable and would be incorporated or definitely influence the next irrigated lands order. And part of the reason we are concerned goes back to the fact that this TMDL will be measuring concentration instead of being from a load-based perspective. And as we've stated in other TMDL discussions, our association strongly encourages the use of a load-based TMDL rather than a concentration-based one. A load-based TMDL would create an incentive to reduce total loading, which can have positive surface and groundwater impacts. If a concentration-based TMDL is adopted, then farmers will actually have an incentive to increase irrigation discharges to decrease the concentration of nitrogen in waters, not decrease load. The concentration-based TMDL will not capture progress that has been and will continue to be made towards meeting water quality targets, is our fear. So we recommend utilizing a load-based TMDL and evaluation of progress. And I understand that this is asking for a further update to this TMDL, but I believe that being that it won't be reevaluated for another 8 years, it's well worth an investment in time, and it will lead to more opportunity to measure and achieve real water quality improvement. Thank you.
Thank you, Abby. And, there has been workshops, have you shared some of these points?
We have as it relates to other TMDLs, but we've not been as active on this one, regrettably. Yeah, but I thought I'd share it today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And the last speaker card is Mr. Kirk Smith.
Good afternoon, Chair Wolf, members of the board, staff. Kirk Schmidt, Executive Director of Preservation, Inc. I'm going to talk about just a very narrow portion of the TMDL dealing with microcystins. This TMDL that's presented to you today says that there are no significant incidences of microcystins in the Pajaro TMDL area, and the only reason they can say that is because there's a cutout of 1,000 acres around Pinto Lake. About 2.5 years ago, you heard a report given to you regarding Pinto Lake where there's very high levels of microcystin in the fall caused by carp and sediment in the lake when it turns over. Mr. Johnson is well aware of the microcystins in Pinto Lake. But aside from Pinto Lake, which is in this watershed, this TMDL does not address that area. It addresses the rest of the watershed, and there are no significant instances of microcystin, and indeed every measurement of microcystin that's in the report is below the threshold that you're asked to adopt. However, in the CEQA analysis for this, there is no data for the microcystins. Indeed, it's linked with chlorophyll A and dissolved oxygen. While there is tremendous research and knowledge about the cause of increased chlorophyll A, increased algae, that is, and declining in dissolved oxygen, and there is no research for the cause of the microcystin blooms on the Central Coast, and indeed the work that's been done, primarily funded by the city of Watsonville on the TMDL for Pinto Lake, shows that there's not even knowledge of the cause of the blooms in Pinto Lake. To include microcystins in this TMDL would be inappropriate because there is not sufficient disclosure of the cause, and therefore there's a very limited CEQA process as to this. It would be better to wait for the research to be completed on Pinto Lake to see what, to determine what the causation is. Otherwise, you potentially adopt a numeric criteria that could have impacts further down the road that are unascertainable at this time. And because of that, it's impossible to predict the consequences or alternatives that should be considered in the CEQA analysis. For this reason, I request that the portion of the TMDL dealing with microcystins be cut out from the TMDL, adopted as stated without the reference to microcystins, and the work proceed on the research on microcystins in Pinto Lake, where there is a lot more attention being paid to it, to determine what the actual cause is, and then come back and revisit microcystins in the larger Pajaro TMDL after that research has been completed. Thank you.
Thank you, Kirk. Mr. Johnson?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions for staff. And Peter, maybe I can address the first one to you, since I know you headed up this TMDL, and I know you're working on the Pinto Lake one. Can you address yourself to Mr. Schmidt's comments regarding microcystis and microcystin?
I agree with Mr. Schmidt that the causes of microcystin or more cyanobacteria pollution are complex, and there are uncertainties. The same can be said of nutrient pollution more broadly. There's uncertainties. So to that extent, yes, I agree there are uncertainties. The reason we have it in the TMDL is it is recognized by, and we document this in the TMDL report, attachment 2 to the staff report. Even though there are complexities and uncertainties, there is a linkage between nutrient pollution and cyanobacteria, harmful algal blooms, and microcystins. This is what EPA and World Health Organization report. So since there is a linkage, even though understanding there's many complexities, even though there's a linkage to nutrient pollution, we want to include it in a nutrient pollution TMDL on that basis and on the basis of protection of human health. In terms of the microcystin data, I only could find one sample that was collected in the Pajaro River. So I can't say definitively that it is a problem or it isn't a problem. I don't know. There was one sample collected. It is true, I agree with Mr. Schmidt, that sample was below the public health guideline as published by OEA, Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. So, but on the basis of one sample, I think it would be, it wouldn't be appropriate for me to say, well, there's no problem. I can't say one way or the other. So the fact that there is a linkage to nutrient pollution, the fact that our board's highest priorities are protection of human health, and the fact that I can't really say that it's not a problem, I can't say that it is a problem, but we want to have it in there as a numeric target, not an enforceable regulatory standard, but as a numeric guideline that we can look at and measure and see if and where in the future there's going to be any problems.
So in response to Mr. Schmidt's statement that all of the samples were below the numeric the public health guideline, you're saying there was only actually one sample that tested for that?
For this TMDL, I only found one sample for the streams in the Pajaro River Basin. It was at Pajaro River at Third Watcher Bridge. There was one sample of microcystins which were elevated above natural background, but they were below the public health guideline. So it was just one sample. So my recommendation is to leave the microcystin numeric water quality target in the TMDL. It's a target, it's a guideline. We're not recommending it be established as a enforceable regulatory standard, but my recommendation is to leave it in the TMDL as a numeric target that we can measure and assess and look at to see in terms of if any human health issues crop up.
Okay, and my second question is to Mr. Harris. We heard concerns from Abby Taylor Silva and kind of indirectly implied from Kay Mercer, I think, regarding the manner in which we're setting numeric targets for specific components and being different from the approach that the State Board is attempting at this point, which is to develop a more modeled approach to figure out how all these different factors interact. And the concern that Ms. Taylor Silva expressed was that that we would pass these objectives today and that then they would surface in our upcoming renewal of the ag order, ag waiver. And now what I heard from Mr. Osmolovsky, I've been practicing, was that that his view was that these were targets we should set that we should wait some years down the road to see if the measures we're taking are going to actually be sufficient. Of course, Mr. Osmolovsky doesn't write the ag waiver. So I just want to get your sense on this, Ken. In terms of the potential, the concern that's being expressed is that we're going to write a TMDL here that is going to impact how we deal with the ag waiver renewal over the next 2 years, let's say. And is it the case that we're simply going to be really, waiting way past that before we use this, or what?
So we were talking about how complex TMDLs are, and I on a lot of these issues, I try to think three-dimensional, both in space and time, with all of these things moving about almost like planets around the sun sometimes. TMDLs are just an approximation. They're subject to revision at any time. And if the State Board, for example, all the regions are adopting numeric TMDLs around the state. That's been going on for a number of years. If the State Board adopts a policy which would apply to the regional boards and it dictates a specific manner in which we should deal with nutrient impacts to waters of the state, then we would just merely go back and revise the TMDLs based on that model. As far as the ag order is concerned, I can't even tell you today when we are going to redo the ag order because we are still waiting on the State Board to address a number of petitions and lawsuits, and all of those dates have slipped, and we know that the State Board is slammed right now with the drought and water rights related issues. So when all of this will happen, I have no idea, but the regulatory mechanisms that we use have sufficient flexibility for us to adapt as conditions, science, data, policies change. And to delay the TMDL, and remember this TMDL, you've basically adopted the same TMDL multiple times now for other water bodies. So we should get started, and I don't think there's anything in here that is irreversible or is going to cause irreversible harm to any party. And the goals in the TMDL are not directly enforceable. And they do rely, and this TMDL does rely on the existing ag order, which has very long time frames. And you saw the time frames that are in here. The first one is 10 years out. So there's plenty of time. And the reopener is 8 years out at the latest, I would say. And if things do change drastically, such as a policy, we would just come back in and revise it and bring it back to the board for readoption.
Well, you touched my third question, which was we've already adopted in the Santa Maria and was it the Salinas, Lower Salinas, nutrient standards based on the same methodology. So is it correct to assume that whatever impact adopting such standards would or would not have on the ag waiver has already happened, and we'll either have to circle back around and deal with that or we won't, but this wouldn't really change that?
I don't know if I can answer your question. Those TMDLs are so new that you know, the impact. I couldn't tell you right now what the impact has been because they rely on the order, and we're only in the third year. Is it third year or 2.5 years into the current order?
Seems like about 10.
It's not. What? Third year. So all of this is pretty recent, so it's hard to give you a specific answer on that.
Thank you.
So I have a quick question for Mr. Osmolowski. Is I've been practicing also, by the way, is, you know, it seems there is a struggle. Got to put a little humor, you know, that otherwise our meeting gets too tense. But, you know, when we talk about the target, it seems that maybe it's a little bit of semantic concerns where people look at a target as being the stick, you know, the you pass or you fail a target. And you're trying to say, no, it's just a, you know, number we're looking at. So, I mean, wouldn't it be sometime more appropriate to use a term, an indicator or a monitoring point? Because I didn't mean to gesticulate, and I totally scared my vice chair here.
Should I answer?
Yes, please.
I agree with you that the jargon and the terminology, it's always bothered me. Numeric target is a word that is established in regulation by the US EPA. We have to use it. But really, I like the idea of it's a water quality goal. It's an acceptable level. In fact, for biostimulation, we are implementing a narrative water quality standard. Narrative water quality standards have no quantitative thresholds. So we are using these numeric thresholds as a prediction of the level we think we need to get down to. So that's what it is. It's a prediction of the nutrients we think we need to get down to in order to implement our narrative water quality standard for biostimulation. So I agree with you. I've never liked those TMDL words like numeric target. It's jargony. It sounds it almost sounds like this is a hard and fast regulatory threshold, but it's the jargon that we're stuck with. And
Is there any way to embed in these documents, you know, what you have very elegantly described, because that would, I think, appease some folks?
No.
Well, that was a pretty short answer, Mr. Harris. Could you expand a little bit?
Sure. It is standard terminology that the program statewide uses, and as he mentioned, it's in law or statute. So we don't want to go there. We've been using that for 15 years. If you want to make that proposal, we're going to have to go back to the state board and to the TMDL program and start tinkering with things. Everyone knows what it is. And you know, people get up and they raise all these concerns, but I'll be honest with you, the sky is not falling on any of these TMDLs that we've developed. And we've developed something like 180 or 200 of those statewide now. And the thing to remember is, except in a few instances, the target is just a reference point against which we measure progress, especially when it comes to nutrients, because they are so site-specific. And as Kay was talking about the numeric nutrient endpoint model, the purpose of that model is to take into all factors like shade, water temperature, nutrients. You can have a stream with very high nitrogen numbers, yet it looks fine because it's shaded, it's cold. Then you can take another stream that has very low numbers, and there's no shade, the water's warm, it's stagnant, and then you'll have problems. So it's very site-specific. So what we're doing is we're averaging numbers over a very large watershed with very different conditions.
Thank you. Mayor Delgado?
Yes, I'm reading from a previous staff report. It says Howard Kolb and Chris Rose have participated in past workshops to develop numeric endpoints, that's nutrient numeric endpoints. And Chris Rose attended a workshop recently in Los Angeles, and the US EPA and State Water Board are in the process of responding to comments from the regional boards on numeric nutrient endpoints. Scientific peer review will be achieved soon, and this will be part of the TMDL peer review. That was in 2005. And so what I heard tonight is that these nutrient numeric endpoints are a coming thing. And my question to staff is, how realistic is it this time around, especially since we've heard it's going to be a few years now where we might be buried in other priorities state at the state level?
So I just want to make sure I understand the question correctly. You're wondering how realistic it is to assume that there's a statewide nutrient policy coming down the pike soon, or?
Right. These okay. nutrient numeric endpoints are seen as an alternative to TMDLs. And it sounded like many years ago we were at that point of peer reviewing them in order to implement them. And yet here we are in 2015 talking about maybe implementing them in the future. So I guess my question is twofold. Did the peer review, et cetera, conclude that it's a go? And how realistic is it that in the next short term, these endpoints will actually become a tool that we can use?
What I can tell you is what I've heard from State Board. Number one, we should recognize the NNE for streams. It's already been approved at the State Board level. It's been approved as a tool for the regional boards to use. Now, the state has its own ideas about a more global policy on nutrients, but the NNE as an as a scientific approach and as a tool, that's already been adopted. Tetra Tech was contracted by the State Board, and they adopted that NNE methodology approach. So that's already in place. Now, what I've heard from the State Board is they would like the regional boards to take that NNE for streams and start applying it and in the regions, and maybe somewhere down the pike, the State Board will, you know, pick and choose the best methodologies that from these TMDLs that the regional boards have adopted and wrap it into some kind of a statewide policy. But they have the State Board staff that I have talked to, they've definitely said, we want the regional boards to take this, run with it, come up with some approaches, and we're sort of the laboratories of implementing this thing, and then they're going to take a step back after some TMDLs have been adopted in the various regions, been implemented, and then they'll take a stab, perhaps, at a statewide policy, and I don't have an exact date for when that'll happen because they've never given me an exact date, so it's somewhere down the pike.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Any more question? All right. So, you know, was there any additional comments from staff that would wrap up, you know, this particular item before, you know, the board takes actions?
I think it would be fair of me to just quickly address Kay Mercer's comments because she had some good comments about And we actually agree with her. We don't, in terms of nutrient pollution, we don't want to just look at, take a grab sample and look at concentrations of nitrate and just say that's the be-all, end-all of how we're going to assess progress. So she's right. We're going to need to look at, and the TMDL does identify the various other metrics, dissolved oxygen, chlorophyll, microcystins, shading, other factors that we need to look at. So I just wanted to acknowledge Kay's comment and say that, in a sense, we agree with her, and we tried to address some of those concerns.
No input, Mr. Harris? All right. So we do have this TMDL item in front of us, and so do we have any more comment, discussion? So do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion that we adopt resolution number R3-2015-0004.
I will second.
Was it date change somewhere? I didn't see it on the signature page.
In the order? Yes.
It's just the place where Ken's going to sign. It has the wrong date, so we'll correct that when he signs it.
Okay.
If you pass it, of course.
Yes. All right, so we have a motion, we had a second. Any further discussion? So roll call, please.
Dr. Wolf?
Yes.
Dr. Hunter?
Yes.
Ms. Cervantes?
Yes.
Mr. Delgado?
Yes.
Mr. Johnston?
Aye.
Mr. Young?
Yes.
Thank you.
So resolution adopted. Thank you very much. Appreciate all your help and the clarification, and also the speakers for giving us some additional insights on your views.